Hi, everybody. This is the 27th Esoteric Astrology Adventure. Today is July 25th, 2011. We were dealing with duality in the last EAA, and we are speaking here of understanding the true significance of duality. When astrologers understand the true significance of the constellation Gemini, the twins, and the dual forces which pour through this sign, the forces in conflict, as they are called, or the quarreling brothers, which we all embody to a degree, and beat upon our planetary life, which pour through this sign and beat upon our planetary life, then the true method of resolving the dualities will be known. And we discuss the contrast between Pollux, the star which represents the soul or spirit aspect, and Castor, three pairs, thus six stars, which represent the forces of matter and form. So our major task upon this planet, which is as a school called the School of Magnetic Response, is to adjudicate between opposites, the higher and lower pairs of opposites, and learn the method of their resolution. DK continues on page 56. It is interesting to note that also that seven of the symbols which express the 12 signs of the zodiac are dual in their nature, and duality can be inferred from them. Each will have, I suppose, a different type of duality, and it's interesting that the number is 7 out of 12, which indicates the area of sacredness. The 7 are sacred, the 5 are non-sacred. So let us see. Okay. We have the two horns of Aries, the ram, moving both forward and backward. It is a sign in which the wheel commences either in its normal undeveloped clockwise direction or counterclockwise direction. We have the two horns of the bull in Taurus, a sign in which the moon, a symbol of fluctuation and duality, is exalted. With Taurus, we have the contrast between the light and the dark, the darkness of matter and the full light of illumination, the blazing light of the greatest light, which Taurus indicates. Taurus as the mother of illumination. So the light and the dark are in deep contrast here. I'm reminded of how DK warns us that as humanity, that if we do not proceed wisely, we can be reinitiated into the earth under Taurus and the worst aspects of Capricorn, or we can proceed into the illumination of the new age. The third is the figures of Gemini, the twins, the two lions representing duality, the second ray, the pillars of wisdom, probably the most telling of the glyphs to represent the pairs of opposites. They appear to be horizontal, but in interpretation they represent the higher and lower pairs of opposites, the left-hand pillar and the right-hand pillar, and they represent the opposites with respect to the path of selfishness and materiality, and the path of selflessness and spirituality. We have the two claws of the crab, and I suppose here it depends on that to which we will adhere or cling. Will we cling to the past and to all that is retrogressive, or will we identify with the spirit itself, with the omnipresent presence? And this will be indicated by Neptune. The two scales of balance in Libra, we are always balancing spirit and matter, two great pairs of opposites, or we are balancing soul and personality. The parallel lines of Aquarius as well, we are speaking here of the possibility of induction. Is it possible for the higher energy to induce its nature in the lower energy, which will respond accordingly? There are many highs and lows for the Aquarian individual. Master DK tells us the hill and valley experience is very common, and the factors of the factor of manic depression is found in relation to this sign. Unpredictable highs and lows, and each one of the lines, parallel lines itself, has a sine wave form indicating the up and the down of the wave. And the two fishes in Pisces do swim in opposite directions. One is swimming in a horizontal direction and represents the ordinary tendencies, the ordinary desires, and the ordinary life, and the other is swimming vertically. So the two together in a way form a cross. One has upward aspiration, and the other deals with horizontal living. Well, we could enlarge upon these, but in seven of the signs at least, duality is found. And as stated, we must learn to resolve these dualities, because they are the major source of pain, and untreated, they promote a disintegrated condition. Some of the signs are unitary, some of them are triple. Virgo and Scorpio are triple signs, involving the union of all three aspects of the human being, spirit, soul, and matter. Leo is considered a unitary sign, and of course it is associated with the number one and with the idea of integration and selfhood. Capricorn is left in an indeterminate place because we are not sure how this sign can be drawn. I think I've left some other signs out, but we'll get to them later. Let's see that we have Aries, Taurus, Gemini, Cancer, Leo, Virgo triple, Libra dual, Scorpio triple, Sagittarius is a sign of one-pointedness. It seems to resolve dualities. So that was the other one which I had left out. Somewhere he treats this. And Sagittarius is an ever-changing glyph. It's been getting smaller and smaller and less literal. The horse has been eliminated. The rider has been eliminated. Finally, we have simply an arrow and a fragment of a bow. So it is the sign opposite Gemini, and signalizes one-pointedness, the resolution of dualities into a vector or direction or an arrow. These seven constellations, therefore, are closely related to six of the sacred planets and to one non-sacred planet. There are two signs which are simply figures and have no significance of duality. Well, let's take a look at the sacred and non-sacred planets that he's talking about. Perhaps Aries we can connect with Mercury, Taurus with Vulcan, Gemini with Venus. I'm dealing with the esoteric rulers here. Cancer with Neptune, Libra with Uranus, Aquarius with Jupiter, and Pisces with Pluto. There is a non-sacred planet. So let's put them in. Pluto, Aquarius here is not Uranus, but Jupiter esoterically. Libra is Uranus. Cancer, the ruler there, is Neptune. The esoteric ruler for Gemini is Venus. And the esoteric ruler for Taurus is Vulcan. Let's see how I did that. Yeah. And the esoteric ruler for Aries is Mercury. He goes through all of the constellations here. These seven constellations, therefore, are closely related to six of the seven sacred planets. It looks like we've left Saturn out of the picture as one of the sacred planets. There are two signs which are simply figures and have no significance of duality. And they are the symbol for Leo, which is simply the lion's tail, although I wonder if we could not make more of it and relate it somehow to the serpent power. Power, possibly. And the arrow is the symbol depicting Sagittarius. There is a kind of duality there, but certainly the emphasis is on unity, and in Leo, the emphasis is upon unity. They embody the idea of isolated separation, the lion's tail, isolated separation, okay, and one-pointed desire, or one-pointed aspiration, that is Sagittarius. Two signs are definitely triple in construction, and this has a clear meaning to the esotericist, and that meaning for us is the union of all the aspects of the triple man. I am the mother and the child, I, God, I, matter, am. I am the mother and the child, and I am also God and matter. So the mother material aspects is represented, the child or son is represented, and God the Father is represented as well. And this is true of Scorpio, although it represents somehow the orientation towards the struggle that will unite the three. So Scorpio has a great deal to do with the conquest by the soul over the material or personal aspect. Virgo also is a triple sign, and Scorpio is a triple sign closely resembling the symbol of Virgo, but in a way it is more masculine, including the upward pointing arrow, which suggests Mars, the major masculine planet. So this triplicity is achieved through a state of struggle, and it's also upward oriented. These two signs, Virgo and Scorpio, are crucial in the experience of the human being. They are decisive, indicating as they do the function of the triple form, okay, and the liberation of man from the imprisonment form. That's the function of the upward pointing arrow. Mars may be a non-sacred planet, but the struggle involved is an integral part of the struggle for liberation. The struggle involved is necessary if we are to achieve liberation from that state in which matter reigns. And we know that one of the key phrases, which is a phrase applied to man when he is on the ordinary wheel, is let matter reign. Thus it is for Virgo. So the liberation of man from the imprisoned in the form Interesting, the moon, which is the mother of the form, falls in the sign Scorpio, so it is overcome. The liberation imprisoned in the form, liberation of the man imprisoned in the form, through the tests in Scorpio, wherein he proves to himself and to the world the reality of that which Virgo has veiled or hidden. Virgo has veiled or hidden the Christ power, which is the soul power, which is the consciousness which no longer chooses to remain subservient to the patterns of form, especially in the lower three worlds, form, which is the form found in the dense physical body of the planetary logos or even the solar logos. The soul in Scorpio then proves itself, and the temptations and the vices and the inclinations to adhere to this lower layer of experience, the three lower worlds, is countered by the power of the soul, the hidden Christ, now grown into power. Each one of us must come to ourselves and demonstrate that we have this power. We realize that we have the power. In Leo, we realize that we are something other than the isolated material personality in the higher experience of Leo, or let's call it the middle experience of Leo, the I am that experience of Leo. And then we just have to prove it when we enter Scorpio. It all has to be worked out on the dense physical plane, which is, of course, a struggle. Scorpio, interestingly enough, is the sign particularly associated with humanity. It rules the hierarchy of human monads, so although one day we will achieve the harmony of full Buddhic infusion, we are a warring kingdom and even a warring creative hierarchy. And our method is harmony through conflict. We cannot avoid this conflict. There's a time, or more than one time in the books, when DK seems to be saying, he does say, see that you battle, see that you struggle. If you're not having a crisis, why aren't you having a crisis? So it is probably not the part of the human being to avoid a necessary conflict which will prove liberating. Anyway, DK is dealing with these signs. One day we shall know the glyph of Capricorn. I have a friend who is quite an astute third-ray thinker, and he put together the sign Aries, and he straightened the tail of Leo and made it into a single serpent, like the Hydrus, or the Hydra that rules the first decanate of Leo, and he put that straightened tail into the cleft here of Aries, like this, and he said that's the sign of Capricorn. It's a combination of the two. Of course, in other words, the two first-ray signs, Aries and Leo, combine to make the third first-ray sign, Capricorn. Of course, I don't know. You know, in a way, it kind of suggests the jewel in the lotus and a relationship to Vulcan, which Capricorn has, and the initiatory power of Capricorn at the third degree, when the jewel begins truly to be revealed. But I think the jury must be out on that particular configuration, and one day we will see. Perhaps it will be revealed by such as DK to those who are approaching the ability to use it wisely. But for the moment, it seems to be a secret, because if we knew it, DK tells us, we would open ourselves to an influx of power, perhaps a very dangerous influx of power, more so than the power that would rush into the open pentagram. In other words, we wouldn't be able to handle it. So we'll have to trust his wisdom on this matter. Well, maybe he's going to talk about it right now. Okay, the symbol for the sign Capricorn is most mysterious. It conceals the mystery of the crocodiles, or the Makara. And one wonders about the crocodiles. We did look at that. See if I can find that again. Fellowship of Cosmic Fire, okay, and AAB diagrams, yes. And the creative hierarchy is here, okay. And we have here the Makara, which is the name given to the 10th or 5th manifested creative hierarchy, the crocodiles, Makara, the mystery. And the name is the human personality. At least that suggests one aspect of the dual 5th creative hierarchy. So, you know, the crocodile, HBB tries to give the crocodile a somewhat better reputation, perhaps, than we normally would give to this animal. And she says it is the first to greet the sun. So she relates it, swimming in the Nile, let us say, it is the first creature to hail the sun. But we also look at the reptilian nature of man and the reptilian brain and this totally selfish, aggressive aspect, which we can identify with the personality. And so there is a mystery in relation to the Makara, which is not entirely dealing with positive factors. When we talk about crying crocodile tears, we speak of insincerity. They are cold-blooded animals, and they attack suddenly and without warning and at great speed. So they seem more, at least to my mind, involved with the downward pointing pentagram and with that part of the man that would like to stay attached to matter form. Will the symbol of Capricorn reveal this, or only the higher aspect of this creative hierarchy? I'm not sure. It is constructed, he says, in an inaccurate and definitely misleading manner. So it looks like there's a veil on the formation of the glyph of the of the sign Capricorn, and should be regarded as a mystery and therefore not to be defined. In other words, he seems to be warning us even against the attempt to define the glyph, and seems to suggest that we leave this until later when more is known. It's almost like a warning. It's not to be defined. I sometimes think that there are instructions here, the one about whom naught may be said. In other words, it is not even permitted to say something about this one about whom naught may be said. But he seems to say some things. Anyway, we have to understand in occultism what is permitted to us and what is not. And occasionally DK gives these warnings. You do notice how there are times when he talks about what he reveals in his books, and he discusses the word permitted. I have been permitted to reveal more. I have been permitted to reveal this. So there are higher powers which are in effect, and to which he, a master of the wisdom, must conform. And certainly we, as aspirants and disciples, have to have some idea of what is permitted to us and what is simply not allowed. All right, so we've reviewed here the formation of some of the signs and the glyphs. I mean, there's no question, power is coming. It's coming to all of us in increasing measure, and the age of Aquarius is in many ways an age of subtle power. We've already seen an incredible release of energy through our understanding of the atom, such as that understanding is. It's more power than humanity has ever had in its hands. And I think under the fifth ray of Aquarius, that's just the beginning. We could have the power to remake or destroy the world. So we have to be very careful in the handling of the power that comes into our hands, because humanity is now becoming increasingly responsible and increasingly holds its own fate, whether towards spiritual excellence or destruction, in its own hands. We go on. These signs and their relationship to the sacred and non-sacred planets will be considered later, yes, and in great detail. So now DK is giving a little summary here. To sum up, man will, therefore, have to be studied as a threefold entity. You know, it is said by the English writer Pope that the proper study of mankind is man. So we certainly must know ourselves under Leo, and the study of esoteric astrology is one of the very best ways of discovering that which is within the human being and that which the human being is. Man will therefore have to be studied as a threefold entity, a composite individual, just as he told us in relation to the creative hierarchies, a given hierarchy working through or expressing through a number of hierarchies, and expressing in the three worlds. So, how does DK view this threefold nature? He calls it the spiritual soul reflecting the monad. The monad is there. Okay. The human soul, which is consciousness immersed or involved with or engaged with a lower form. The human soul reflecting the divine soul. And the form nature, which should be the revealer of the two higher. We cannot discount the form. We must not do that, because if there is to be perfection through the number seven, the form must indeed be archetypally, or become archetypally beautiful. It must reflect the patterns in the heavens. So some of the sixth ray approaches, which seem to dismiss the form as unworthy of attention, I think are not really in line with the plan wherein, especially in a seventh-ray age, the highest and the lowest must meet. So the spiritual soul is sometimes considered to be the spiritual triad. That's one of the ways of looking at it. But in a way, and we're told that the true soul is the triad, so man enters into a state of true soul after the causal body, which is considered the shroud of the soul, is dissipated. And you know, this word spiritual particularly relates to the triad in a technical sense, whereas we are told the word divine relates to the monad. So the spiritual soul, as the personality of the monad, is to reflect the monad. The human soul is to reflect the divine soul. Now, this is interesting, because the word divine relates to the monad, but perhaps in this context the word divine simply means the soul on its own plane, although I have often thought that the monad is not without awareness. Any point of being has its awareness. The monad is a point, essentially, of pure being, and therefore has or expresses divine soul. The divine soul, in a way, is gathered into or focused within what we call the central fire or the jewel in the lotus. So the human soul, which is immersed in various types of forms in the three worlds, must somehow reflect this jewel in the lotus, which is an extension of the monadic presence and of monadic awareness. And of course, that does not mean that the human soul must not also reflect spiritual soul. I don't know if DK is using these words here in a technical and completely precise sense. But divine soul, I'm calling the awareness of the monad, and spiritual soul, I'm calling the type of awareness that is experienced within the so-called personality of the monad, which is the spiritual triad. In other words, Atma, Buddhi, and Manas, the type of consciousness they're experienced, I'm calling spiritual soul. The form nature, well, even the causal body is the form nature, but usually we are speaking of the personality nature. And it should be the revealer of the soul consciousness and the monadic power and awareness. Well, then we would be integrated beings, wouldn't we? And then all aspects of our nature would be drawn together and be able to function together, and we would walk the earth as the monad in expression through the forms at the disposal of the monad. And one day this will be the case, especially for those who choose to remain in association with the lower worlds by building a will-created body through which they can continue to influence the three lower worlds. It won't be a real personality, but it will be a deliberately formed aggregation through which the self-aware spirit can express according to the divine plan. All right, let's continue. See how we're doing here. Yeah, we're doing well. Three creative hierarchies condition the man in incarnation. You know, that word creative, of creative hierarchies, suggests that they are indeed related to the third aspect of divinity, the preferred name of which, preferred by DK, is the ray of creative intelligence. They are to create within various worlds of form. They are to create within objects, such as it is. Each one of these groups of or aggregations of monads is to create various types of forms and work through the forms created, or work through the forms created by other creative hierarchies. So the term creative has to be understood and kept in mind. Three creative hierarchies condition the man in incarnation, and I believe these are not exactly the ones which DK said were most important. He included the second creative hierarchy. Here he is including the fourth and the fifth, as he did in the previous listing, but now he's adding the sixth, which is the hierarchy of lunar lords, which is the vitality. This hierarchy is the vitality of the various lunar vehicles that the human being uses. So somehow the big battle, there's the union of man, the monad, assisted by a projection of the solar angel, helping him create his individuality. And this union of two is opposed to the desirous orientation of the hierarchy ruled by Sagittarius, the major sixth-ray sign at this time, and Mars, a major sixth-ray planet. And so the reorientation of desire is required. And the Buddha was the great teacher when it came to instructing man how he could be done with ordinary desire and reorient that desire through aspiration, aspirational idealism. So the the question of the direction pursued by the sixth creative hierarchy is of great importance. These three hierarchies, the hierarchy of human monads, the hierarchy of solar angels, especially, I suppose, in its higher aspect of that hierarchy, and the hierarchy of lunar lords, combine to make human life pretty much what it is at this time. And remember, we do live in an astral Buddhic solar system, which is not yet in a way a sacred solar system by a higher method of determining sacredness. And the astral body is very powerful in our solar system. It is a unitary vehicle. The Lord Varuna, or his higher correspondence in a solar systemic sense, has not yet has united all the factors in his vehicle, whereas the Lord Agni and Kashiti have not united their vehicles. Or when I say Agni or Kashiti, perhaps their higher correspondences. The Lord Varuna is the Lord of the astral body of our planetary logos, but there is a higher correspondence for some being that is embodying the astral body of the solar logos, and we're not given that name. And the same is true for a still greater being in which the cosmic astral plane is embodied by a great being who is the still higher counterpart to the solar embodiment and to the Lord Varuna in respect to our planet. Three creative hierarchies condition the man in incarnation, the fourth or ninth, the fifth or tenth, and the sixth. You know how it goes here. Here's the fourth or ninth, the fifth or tenth, and here is the sixth. Okay. These in collaboration, because creative hierarchies are always collaborating and man is a multiple being, create man at the same time constitute the field of his expression. Man, the monad, is expressing through that which the solar angel has created, namely his causal body. That is a truer vehicle of expression for us than the personality, or at least one day it will be. And naturally, the lunar lords have created the personality vehicles, and man, the monad, expresses not only then through the causal field, but through the personality field. So man is consequently a blend of electric fire, being a divine flame that reminds one of the triple flame of the solar logos's causal body. Man is a divine flame, sometimes called a spark, but the flame is somehow a more powerful symbol, I think, and the spark must be reunited with the flame. So it is a blend of electric fire, being a divine flame, and becomes eventually responsive to the three major controlling influences. Well, there is a triple flame that represents spirit, and when you look at when you look here, okay, yeah, let's find that one. When you look here at the graphic that suggests the monad, you see indeed that it is triple. So perhaps the triple flame is man must relate to the monad considered as a triplicity, but the monad is also a unity because within the triangle there is a unifying point. And there we have perhaps the tetrahedron as the symbol of the inner fire. It's fourfold in a way, it is a triangle, and yet it is a unity. Okay, so man is a blend of electric fire and becomes eventually responsive to the three major controlling influences, and presumably, these are the three persons of the Trinity and even the triune solar logos. we see him in that way. Man is also solar fire, being a solar angel in manifestation. Well, this is a difficult phrase. Man is not the solar angel who is the returning nirvani from a previous Maha Manvantara. That is a distinct being that was man at that time and became a member of a still higher creative hierarchy and went to Sirius for, let's call it, education, and returned into our solar system to help animal, the animal man of our time. But because the monad is expressing through that which the solar angel has created and in which it has invested a portion of its being and consciousness, man takes on the guise of a solar angel. He is working through a solar angelic vehicle on the higher mental plane, even though that may not be the only vehicle of that great being called the solar angel. So man then expresses through that solar angelic vehicle and then appears in a way as a kind of solar angel. He is attempting to become a solar angel. As a matter of fact, the bulk of human beings are on their way to the constellation Sirius or the star Sirius for training as solar angels. Maybe, well, take a figure out of the air, but, you know, maybe 80% of human beings who are not, those human beings who are not very, very strongly already on the monastic line will go to Sirius for training as solar angels. So man is a kind of a junior solar angel, and as he works his way up toward the fourth initiation, and as the solar angel per se is relieved, man is then possessed of some of the potencies that the solar angel has inculcated into him. See, that's the whole thing. Is the causal body the solar angel? Well, the causal body is a configuration which is created by the solar angels as the solar angels substand and geometrize the matter of the higher mental plane. So in a sense, the causal body is an extension of the energy of the solar angel. But it is not the solar angel per se, even though the solar angel is partially invested in it. You know, these great beings have emanative power, so they can emanate a portion of themselves into a particular field while retaining consciousness in another. So it's a difficult issue, and it forces us to think in ways we may not have thought before. How can you be in two places at the same time? Well, a master can, you know. A master has his own consciousness, and yet the disciple can become an outpost of the master's consciousness. The master invests a certain portion or a degree of intensity of his consciousness in the disciple's field of consciousness. So there is the divisibility of the spirit and there is the divisibility of consciousness. You know, God is in all places simultaneously. You know, God sees with 10,000 eyes. God can specifically focus his consciousness in many places, and we have the idea that not a sparrow falls, but God realizes this to be the case. So the high beings have the ability to split, divide, multiply their consciousness in many of what we call locations. And this is the case with the solar angel too, having pervaded the entire little universe of man with a fraction of myself, I remain. Well, that little universe of man is pervaded, and the solar angel is there, and the solar angel underlies and infuses and permeates this causal vehicle, but not the entirety of the solar angel. At least that's how I understand it for the moment. I always have to say for the moment, because understanding can be constantly modified. So man is also solar fire, being a solar angel in manifestation, a very somehow important statement. He then becomes increasingly responsive to the influence of the 12 constellations. And we remember DK earlier related the constellations to a soul function and the planets to personality and environmental circumstantial function. He, man, is likewise fire by friction and comes under the influence of the planets. And the tabulation below should make this somewhat clear. Well, DK is being very, very definite about these things. Probably the divine flame is related to the three superior constellations, this his soul function to the zodiacal constellations, his personality function to the planets. But if you really look carefully, you will see that all three of these factors, or at least two of them, let's say two of them, namely the planets and the zodiacal signs, can have an impact on all three aspects of human nature. After all, man's monad is definitely a part of a center of a particular planetary logos, and that relates the planet to the monad, doesn't it? And there are certain sacred planets which obviously facilitate the expression of the soul. And then, as DK says here, the planets work in relation to the personality and the environment of the individual. And it is so, I showed you the quotation where the zodiac was related to the monadic function of man. Here DK is emphasizing its relation to the soul. And in A Treatise on White Magic, he talks about the zodiac as ruling the man who lives below the diaphragm, and he seems to relate zodiacal influence, or at least of the signs, if not the constellations, to sub-diaphragmatic activity. When it comes to the great constellations, well, they certainly have the three great ones, Sirius, Great Bear, and Pleiades. They have certainly a soul relationship, because when a man takes the third initiation, he is a dominant soul. The soul has ended the ancient authority of the personality and is now the dominant factor. And, of course, the three great constellations are very important in his spirit aspect, in relation to his spirit aspect. Perhaps not in relation to his personal aspect, because he doesn't feel the personal aspect. He doesn't feel the constellations when he is entirely connected with his personal aspect. So anyway, DK tabulates this. He calls, he says, we have electric fire, and this is experienced on the path of initiation. The path of initiation, particularly involving the first and seventh ray, it's the fourth hierarchy of human monads. We are talking here about full soul expression, which probably means, in a way, triadal expression, or the expression of the soul of the monad. See, we can understand that the monad, as a point of universal awareness, has awareness. It has soul. It has consciousness. Consciousness and soul are the same. What we call the soul is simply a localization of consciousness at a particular depth of immersion in matter. It is a its soul within a given formal ring pass knot. But soul is a much more expansive thing. So soul is universal consciousness. It is cosmic consciousness. It is consciousness per se as a great aspect, just the way being is a great aspect. So on this path of electric fire, we tread the path of initiation, particularly from the third initiation on, Our monadic nature comes into awareness, and the nature of the fourth creative hierarchy comes into awareness. We will receive full soul expression. Now, that's very interesting, because the causal body has to be, in a way, destroyed for there to be full soul expression, because the causal body is the shroud of the soul, and definitely limits consciousness to a type of super individuality. So, you know, we have to watch every word here. The goal here is identification with the monad, and actually what I like to say when identification with the monad, I'd like to call it identification as the monad, because that is what we are, the monad. And when we say with, it sounds like it's a different thing, but we are simply an extension of the monad. We are the monad in extension. So we re-identify as if we were the monad, which we are. And this produces responsiveness to the three great constellations, however, in whatever order you want to list them. I think of the Great Bear, Sirius, and the Pleiades as representing the first, second, and third aspects, but as we have discussed, there are other ways to work that around so that even Sirius can, with respect to our solar system, look like the dominating factor. And the Great Bear at one point is placed upon the cosmic Buddhic plane in the chart on page 344 of Cosmic Fire, which seems to say, okay, it's connected somehow with the second aspect of divinity. The solar fire is ruling on the path of discipleship. And the fifth creative hierarchy of solar angels is important here. We have full life experience, soul life. Well, we have a full experience of life in the worlds in which consciousness is immersed. We have soul life, but we don't have full soul life, because the soul is not yet liberated from the higher mental plane. As far as solar fire goes, I like to say that it really is operative after the third initiation as well. That since the ray of the spiritual triad is the same as the ray of the soul or ego on the higher mental plane, and since a master achieves the kind of consciousness which works through the atmic plane where that soul ray is still active, even at the fifth initiation, I like to say that this solar fire is somehow sustained through the expression of the spiritual triad, and the soul ray does persist in the life of the high initiate, even the initiate of the fourth degree, and even the initiate of the fifth degree, although the monad grows in power. Solar fire, path of discipleship. Of course, that term discipleship, it can last a long time. It can apply to even high initiates, initiates higher than masters. They are disciples. And sometimes the solar fire is seen as expressing through Agni on planes number 2, 3, and 4. So, you know, solar fire is the main fire of our solar system. We don't just get rid of that. Even electric fire is a subsidiary category within the main and large solar fire. But, you know, at face value here on the path of discipleship, we're learning to wield solar fire. We're learning the power of love and unity. We're learning the magnetism of the soul, and this makes our life experience much fuller, because all of our gifts found in the causal vehicle are applied. All of our riches are applied in the correct type of expression. So what is the goal? Identification with the soul, or I like to say as the soul, and produces responsiveness to the 12 zodiacal constellations. Well, you know, DK is setting out a structure here which is pretty definite, relating the constellations to the soul, but keep in mind those other sentences which show other relations as well. Identification as the soul. So this is group consciousness. identification as the monad is more what we call universal consciousness, because the monad is that which finds its home within the sun. So, you know, the monad can have includes much more than the egoic groups and so forth. If you expand, of course, the group, you get the universal picture. So it's just a question of degree. Man is also fire by friction, and here we're treading the path of evolution for the majority of the millions of years we are man. As a matter of fact, you know, if you take an arbitrary figure and say that on the average it takes 25 million years to make a man, and of course that number 25 has been assigned, Stephen Pugh, a very excellent rayologist, has assigned that number to the fourth ray, and here we have the fourth grade of hierarchy, and here we have the idea that it maybe take 25 million years to make a man. The majority of that 25 million is spent under the influence of fire by friction. A short portion is spent under solar fire, and a very brief portion for man as man is spent under the influence of electric fire. So here we're dealing with the sixth hierarchy, which is providing the vitality of our lunar vehicles, as we read earlier in that very short section on the sixth hierarchy. And here we have the life experiment going on. We can relate it more to the mutable cross, just as we can relate category two to the fixed cross on the path of discipleship, and we can relate the path of true initiation to the cardinal cross, even though you are treading the path of initiation before you truly step upon the cardinal cross. Stepping upon the cardinal cross, endures for a long, long time. In other words, the great beings like Sanat Kumar and so forth are on the cardinal cross. The fixed cross is really the shortest in duration. But as far as man is concerned, the cardinal cross experience is very, very small. But the cardinal cross will be related then to this path of initiation, and especially after the fourth degree, and as one approaches the fifth degree, the cardinal cross, with more of its potentials, must come into view. All right. I don't think that we can begin this next section. So we've just been completing EAA 27, and we began at page 56 or so, and we went to page 58. And we will take up in EAA 28, The Great Wheel and Spiritual Unfoldment. So we've been dealing with the three fires here. We've been dealing with the major hierarchies that condition man. We've been dealing with man as a triplicity, a threefold entity. We've been dealing with the glyphs and whether they are a dual, a unitary in some manner, or whether they are triple, and how well they are drawn. This has been the subject that we've been dealing with in this particular esoteric astrology adventure. So now we will together sound the great invocation. But I have to, you know, I know you know it by memory, but I just have to pull it out here, and I see I didn't do that ahead of time. And this has to be done by pulling up the AAB compilation. Well, maybe it's not worth trying to do that. Let's see. All right, right there. Hopefully this will work. All right, yeah, it will. Okay. And I should always keep that handy, of course. Om. from the point of light within the mind of God. Let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Continue with esoteric astrology adventure. It is an adventure, I think. Adventure in penetrating the depths of understanding as much as we can. Okay, we will do that next. Bye for now.